Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello, you are very welcome to The Tonight Show. Coming up, a damning statement from Shuni Rally outlines how the former RTE chair could not stay silent on what she termed an enforced dismissal. Also, data's dilemma as cabinet ministers clash over the future of data centres. We debate if they are a strength or a strain on the Irish economy. And the chair of the Electoral Commission, Judge Marie Baker, is here to answer your questions on the upcoming referendums on family and care. I cannot remain silent. These were the words of former RTE board chair Shuni Rally as she addressed her controversial resignation for the first time today. A 2,300-word statement published late this afternoon referred to an enforced dismissal, which seemed designed to damage Ms. Rally's reputation. Well, joining me now to discuss this further is Fianna Fáil TD and European Parliament candidate Barry Cowan, to give you your full title, Sinn Féin TD Eoin Óibrin, political reporter with the Irish Independent, Gabby Agatafiscata, and professor of politics at DCU, Gary Murphy. You're all very welcome to the programme. To come to you first, Gabby, it was a long statement. It was 4 pages long. I thought, as we got closer to 4 o'clock, this was going to be an RTE-free show this evening, but not to be the case, because there was a lot in this statement. Summarise it for me.
Yeah, broke her silence, and broke her silence she definitely did, Shuni Rahali, in this really quite bombshell statement that she's put out. She put it out through a public relations company, and she also sent it to the media committee. Look, to give a kind of a headline summary, she's really hitting back strong at the media minister, Catherine Martin, who, of course, last week went in front of the media committee. She very much laid the blame at Shuni Rahali's doorstep. And now Shuni Rahali's come back. She's having her say. She's saying that the minister was hands off in her approach. She's saying that she communicated with the RTE board chair through her civil servants, her officials, and that wouldn't necessarily be the case. She's saying how she doesn't understand and she's baffled how, you know, this exit package for Richard Collins, who's a former chief financial officer, how that was signed off in October, and all these months later, it's suddenly become an issue again. She doesn't understand why questions weren't asked in the meantime. She's even picking up at the very start of the RTE controversy when the media minister, in a blunder, you know, she neglected to say, should people pay or not pay their TV licence? She neglected to say that they should pay it. Her spokesman had to come back and clarify and say, yes, of course they should pay it. You know, she's throwing that into the statement as well. She's saying, you know, media minister failed to appoint board members and that put a lot of pressure on me.
She actually specifically referred to the lack of financial acumen on the boards at a time when they didn't have a CFO in RTE, and that put an extra pressure on Shuni Rahali.
Yeah, that she felt this personal pressure. You know, she's also saying there was a plan to get rid of me in the way that the prime time interview was done. Of course, we heard this extraordinary timeline of events that the media minister outlined last week at the media committee. Shuni Rahali saying, look, like there was one query that came in, we kind of had a response for the day after, but it almost kind of felt like there was a plan to get rid of her. Of course, the media minister went on the programme. She declined to express her confidence in the chair, and then Shun resigned, you know, mere hours later. And Shun Nirahali also details that in the statement. She says that she kind of convened with the DG and they said, look, I had my choice. Okay, my position was untenable. I had to go.
So she picked a lot of holes, I suppose, in the version of events that we heard from Catherine Martin last year. Is the minister wounded by this, Barry Cowan?
I don't know. It's unfortunate that this turn of event has happened today. I thought we had passed it. I thought we were moving on to the stage where reports would be put before the various, before RTE board, before the committees, with recommendations on new ways and means of governance that would move beyond the present phase that we were in. you know, it's unfortunate the way the issue evolved, taking into consideration the prime time interview and what happened thereafter. I would have thought or hoped that the chair would have taken the opportunity to meet with the minister on the following day.
Do you think she could have
done
that?
And I would have thought so, yeah. But look, she didn't. She'd made her own decision. The minister had to move on. The minister has moved on. It's essential that the new chair is given time and space, not that he has much of it, to respond quickly and effectively to the reports that are imminent with a view to addressing many of the issues that have come to light over the last number of months.
But you resigned, I suppose, Barry Cowan, as Minister for Agriculture, and at the time, having spoken to you, it was clear that you didn't feel that due process was being afforded to you. Do you not have some empathy and sympathy?
I
not
resign. I went in and had it out and lost. And that's, you know, and that avenue was open to the chair if she saw fit, and I would have thought she should
have.
So
do you have sympathy for her?
I'm disappointed for her, obviously, because she was obviously very committed to the role and very interested and anxious to have a telling role and to resolve issues and put this back on the footing it should be and get on with the job of public broadcasting in the way and fashion that people would appreciate.
So
that's not the case, and it's unfortunate. But this thing about she said and she didn't say and when she said it, it's neither here nor there. Look, we've got to get on.
So do you think it's unfortunate because we are at a point, I think, where we're going to move on. We'll be talking about the new chair that's just been appointed, yes, we believe. Now we're back talking about the she said. Is that unfortunate? It's unfortunate
it is
that Shona Rally has brought us back to that point.
It is unfortunate, you know. And, you know, the point was made that the information was relayed to the department back in October. And why did it come up in February? It came up in February because the issue about confidentiality associated with golden handshakes became an issue that needed to be resolved and needed to be addressed. And when the minister saw it...
Perhaps it should have been an issue last October when it came to the minister's...
Well, look, the minister sought information in relation to it because it was not necessarily aware of the confidentiality clause, especially when everyone's seeking transparency around these issues. She couldn't get an answer. She felt disappointed. She wanted to have it out with the chair, resolve it, move on. The chair chose to resign. She has to put somebody else in place and move on, and that's what I expect everybody to do.
What's your read at this stage, Eoin O'Brien?
Well, first of all, it just further damages the public perception of RTE. It will further demoralise an already demoralised workforce. In some senses, you know, if the minister had issues with Sheehan, then she should have sat down with her and talked to her rather than effectively sacking her live on the state broadcaster. But it does speak to a minister who has been kind of hands-off on this from the very start. And it's not just about, for example, her attitude to the chair of the board or the governance issues. We still don't know what the government's plan is in terms of the financing model for RTE. Catherine Martin has dithered on that. We still don't have clarity in terms of whether or not RTE is going to be, as it should be, brought under the auspices of the Controller and Auditor General so that we could at least start to have some real transparency and accountability on their finances. Likewise, for example, with the Public Accounts Committee. So it kind of speaks to, and it's the latest episode in a government that is kind of hands-off with this crisis. And what does the public want? The public wants accountability, transparency, and they want reform, and they need the reform of RTE now. And if that's further delayed, and again, the issue of the financing model and the need to abolish the TV licence is key.
OK, but the minister is saying, look, she can't make a decision until she gets these two final reports on RTE, looking at things like corporate governance.
Simply not the case, because we've already had an independent review that recommended the abolition of the licence. So the government could make that decision. The problem is government is at sixes and sevens. They don't agree. And Catherine Martin, because she's hands-off, isn't driving the reform agenda of her own department. So I do think she's damaged. I think RTE is damaged. And I think the public is increasingly being turned off by this kind of public war of words and the lack of any actual real action by government to sort the whole mess out.
Has the public's eyes glazed over at this point, Gary Murphy?
I think probably so, Ciara. For the minister, I think nothing worse than being damned by saying that you're hands-off by the former chair of the authority. I can't think of anything worse than a minister being accused of hands-off in a crisis that has engulfed the public, but are a bit sick of it now, certainly. I agree
and
with
to be fair, And to be fair, it's not just Shona Rally who said the minister has been hands-off.
Many
of us have looked to try to speak to the minister on numerous occasions over the last 9 months, and she hasn't been forthcoming.
Well, indeed, and I was going to say I agree with Eoin, maybe for once, on the grounds of reports. I mean, there have been dozens of reports on RTE. committee. And certainly the Future of Media Commission reported, it said that the licence should be enveloped into direct taxation, and the government could have simply have taken a decision on that without kicking. And that's like 4 years ago now, nearly. And since then, since government came into office, now 4 years, the election was 4 years ago this month or last February, I think she has been one of the weaker ministers, to be perfectly frank about it. She's obviously a woman not short of self-confidence. She obviously challenged Eamon Ryan for the leadership of the Green Party, even though he had taken them to their greatest ever electoral success. But I'm afraid when the history books are written on media in this country, I don't think the name of Catherine Martin will be in lights.
She has tried, I suppose, to take control of this again, because this evening we're hearing reports that the new chair will be appointed tomorrow, and a name put in that person, Terence O'Rourke, who used to be with KPMG and has served on other boards.
Yeah, he's a chartered accountant, and I think that's kind of where the government is really going on this. I mean, we did see other names floated, like, for example, the previous CEO of the HSE, Paul Reid. Terence O'Rourke is a chartered accountant, used to be a partner with KPMG, so he will be seen as somebody who is quote-unquote good with money. But just on Gary's point, not only did we have the Future of Media Commission, the media minister then set up a technical working group to look at the Future of Media Commission's findings and to find solutions as to how the TV licence can be reformed. They reported back to the minister, I don't know how long ago now, we've not seen the findings of those reports either. So it's report after report after report, and actually no decisions in RTE have been made. And when those, you know, and they will be damning reports that will be published, those external independent reviews into RTE's culture and governance. Like, are we going to be shocked by anything that they say? You know, they're going to be pretty damning. They're not going to be complimentary of RTE at all. And then the government will say, OK, I mean, now we need time.
So it's a fair question, isn't it, Barry Cowan? Why do you need those reports?
One working group on top of another working group.
Yeah, why do we need to? Is it not just kicking the can down the road? And then I want to move on from RTE.
Yeah, the government appear to have given her the benefit of the doubt in relation to awaiting the reports that have been commissioned in relation to the government's issues in order for recommendations to emanate from that. And I suppose parallel to that will be the issue about the funding of RTE will come into play at that stage. And there is a commitment by government to ensure that that is the case as soon as it's practically possible.
And do you think that'll happen before the summer recess? Honestly, because, I mean, most people who've sat in here have said absolutely not.
Well, I think it could and it should, and I see no reason why it shouldn't, of course.
It's one of the real difficulties here is that there's not unanimity in government here.
Well, whether there is or isn't at this stage, there will have to be soon enough in order for a decision to be taken by that government. And I expect that they will take on board the responsibilities and ensure they...
OK, we will see. Let's just move...
But also, meanwhile, RTE are losing money day after day, week after week, month after month. People are being taken to court for non-payment of a TV licence in the middle of all of this scandal. So there is a real urgency for government.
They should continue to pay them, should they?
Absolutely. I pay my TV licence and I would encourage all people to do so. But the bigger issue is, given the scale of non-payment, because people are so angry and frustrated with the failure of government to get a grip on this, the quicker you move on the financing model, the better.
Exactly. Rather than a waiver.
As the Commission said, scrap the TV licence, fund it through general taxation and make the organisation subject to control.
OK, let's move on, Gabia, to what is important to people, because we had a Sunday Independent Thinks poll, Ireland Thinks poll, at the weekend. And back at the very top there, the issue that people are talking about, the issue that is really impacting people's lives. We thought for a while it might be immigration would be the big talking point coming up to the election, but it's housing. Housing is at the forefront of people's concern.
Yeah, and I think health and housing, when you look at what, for example, what Sinn Féin are strongest on in the Dáil, it's those two issues that they keep hammering the government on. And in fairness, you know, they're kicking them where it hurts when it comes to housing and health, because it's something that everybody, you know, every single one of your viewers is going to have experience. They either own a home or they're renting, they're on probably some form of a waiting list for something or other. So it's an experience they can directly relate to. I think it's interesting if you look at the polls to see how the issue of immigration, for example, has crept its way up there and it's still remaining high as well. And we know that the government, you know, they're cutting the payments for the Ukrainian refugees, the new ones that are coming into the country. It's an issue that's very sticky, especially when it comes to the referendums.
But actually, in this particular poll, it fell way back. It fell by 10 points, didn't it, the immigration issue? It's now the fourth, you know, issue that
but
people
it's
are
in
concerned
the top.
About.
I mean, it's, you know, I think previously we would have seen things like cost of living issues, for example, you know, which would have been very high up in those polls. I think immigration is one that's there to stay. You know, health and housing for sure are always going to be things that affect people the most, and so they're always going to be at the top of the list. And I think electorally, if Sinn Féin want to, you know, try and benefit from the government, to leave things aside like justice and to hammer the government on health and housing.
Okay, so there are two, I suppose, very strong issues for Sinn Féin, Gary Murphy, and yet once again, and I'll come to you in a moment on this, Eoghan Brin, we are seeing a slide in the polls for Sinn Féin. It was up at the mid-30s. We thought it might settle, stabilise around the high 20s, down again in this poll to 27. Given the fact that housing is the number one issue for people, why are Sinn Féin continuing to slide?
Yeah, I mean, housing and health were the number one and two issues at the 2020 general election at about 25% each. So half the people who voted said that housing and health were their two most important issues. And without, you know, giving Eoghan too much praise, I think, to be fair to Sinn Féin, Eoghan and David Cullinan have been very effective opposition spokespeople, maybe the most effective in one way. But, I mean, I thought the Sinn Féin vote at 33, 34% was a bit soft. And I think the last poll in Sunday's Independent and the Business Post the week before that, give it a kind of regressing to the mean a little bit, which is probably in the high 20s. Now, it's, there were 8 points still ahead of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, which is a lot. But I mean, the big issue is if it settles at about 28%, how do you form a majority? How do you form a coalition government, especially if Fianna Fáil don't go in? Let's assume Fine Gael won't go in with Sinn Féin. You're trying to cobble together a government of Sinn Féin, the soft left, the Greens, perhaps a few independents. I think we can all say, for, if nothing else is for certain in Irish politics, is that the hard left will have nothing whatsoever to do with government. So in that context, I think the road to an election victory and government for Eoghan and his colleagues, it's still to play for, but it's a bit off, I would think.
Yeah, Eoghan, the decline continues, doesn't it? Why? What's your read?
Well, you always prefer if you're going up in the polls than down in the polls. But I do think some of the commentary has been a little bit overly dramatic. Like, we've gone from polling average of about 33% for a good part of last year. At the minute, we're a polling average of about 28% across the polls.
But at one stage now, it was up at 35, and the most recent poll had you down at 27.
But they were a pretty significant
slide.
They were always outliers, those high numbers. And for me, the polling averages and the trend over the poll is what's really important. So you're talking about a 5-point difference between the general average last year and where we are at the start of this year. I think a couple of things are happening, in my view. First of all, there's still a very, very significant group of undecideds. And those people are only going to make up their mind, as we saw with the last general election, when the general election is called. And therefore, the debates, particularly about housing and health, are really going to motivate those people. It's going to be all to play for.
But just to go back to my question, which was, why do you think you've lost?
I'm not so sure that we've lost in the sense that we're still ahead of where we were in terms of the general election. So we took, about 25%. We're averaging now 28%. We're still significantly ahead of the other parties. There was a soft increase last year. There's a soft decrease. But that can easily go back in the other direction. And for me, the crucial thing is, I get a sense of talking to people out there, people who, when we were hitting the 33, 34%, were very much looking for change. There's a bit of fatigue. They're kind of asking, can things actually change? Are things going to continue to be as bad as they are? And I think what we have to do better, because obviously we have to improve our game, is make sure on those issues that are of paramount importance to people, they understand very clearly there is an alternative. Things can be done dramatically differently to the failed policies of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and the Green Party on housing and health. And to give us that chance.
We might end up forming a coalition with Fianna Fáil, though, so how is that really different then?
The crucial thing is the policies. For me, what I think is going to decide the next general election is you will have two parties defending a status quo where on housing, for example, house prices, rents and homelessness are going through the roof and social affordable housing delivery is way off target, or an alternative agenda for change with a really different set of policies that give people hope.
Hope that they can get a roof
over their heads at a genuinely affordable price, something they can't do under this government.
Okay. Right. I think as you get closer to an election or elections, as will be the case this year, people begin to critically analyse and scrutinise the policies, the alternatives, and what might emanate. And if you look closely at some aspects of Sinn Féin policy, you hear at the weekend was a 250 million gap in their budget preparations of last year. You look at the 3,600 extra homes that are provided for in relation to an extra delivery of social homes. The figure that was provided for the cost of that, as against the average cost of a house, which the department says is 308,000, Sinn Féin says 251,000, that's a 200 million gap.
They say they'd scrap property tax. It's a 400 million gap. And they say carbon tax will be scrapped, up to 600 million of a gap. That's 1.5 billion in total that is unaccounted for. And that people are beginning to think to themselves, where are we going here? What's the alternative? Are we to get that back in other taxes, in personal taxes, in taxing work? If you tax work, you spook business, industry, commerce. People get up and leave. Jobs are lost. Record levels of exports are lost.
All right.
Record levels of revenue are threatened. These are issues that are beginning to crystallise in people's minds, and these are issues that people will begin to investigate.
OK,
and
so
just
some
of the issues that have emerged in recent times that would allow people to think again before they make a final decision.
OK, your policies aren't standing up to scrutiny. That's what's happening.
No, I don't accept that at all. And in fact, the Sunday Business Post article didn't actually say or prove that there was any gap in our policy.
What about the gap in housing?
They were comparing apples and oranges.
What about the gap in housing?
And people will see through that. What the election campaign is going to be about is two very, very different visions for healthcare and housing in this country. And people know what they get when Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are in government. They get house prices rising, healthcare waiting lists getting ever longer.
So are you saying, just to be clear, holes in your budget that were identified in the Sunday Business Post, are you saying that's all incorrect?
Oh, absolutely.
And
100%.
Is the 200 million in relation to housing
100%.
Incorrect?
And what's really interesting...
And will you scrap the first time buyers?
Absolutely. And what's really interesting...
You will scrap the help and assistance available to first-time buyers in the form of...
Which of your questions would you like me to answer?
And you can answer them all, one by one.
What's really interesting is that over the last 3 years, Dara O'Brien has underspent his social and affordable housing budget by €1 billion. The low levels of targets for the delivery of social...
It doesn't roll from one year to the next.
8,000 social homes that should have been delivered over the last 3 years haven't. Hardly any affordable homes have been delivered, and the ones that are far too expensive.
We've met all our targets.
You haven't met any of your social and affordable housing targets.
Yes, we have.
Actually, we're not quite sure, because we haven't got the figures for last year whether or not those social and affordable targets have been met.
It's still the biggest issue, and will be the biggest issue. And we're not afraid of that. We're not worried by that. We took on that portfolio with a view to making progress. We are making progress, not enough. But this man, there's gaps in his figures. Big gaps in his figures, and it's beginning to be found out.
Here's the figures that count. Highest levels of homelessness.
What's the price?
Let me make the point, Barry. Yeah. Right? Here's the figures that count. House prices now higher than at their Celtic Tiger peak. Rents plummeting.
House price. And how are you going to get them back to 300,000 in Dublin?
We are going to do exactly what we said we were going to do. We're going to deliver very large volumes of affordable homes delivered by local authorities and approved housing bodies, and they will be sold at prices of 300,000
or less. You're going to buy them, you
said.
Your policy paper says you're going to buy them from the private sector.
Just as the government does currently.
Yeah.
The difference is...
The difference is
they will be sold at prices that people can genuinely afford. And here's the problem.
Sinn Féin are saying...
Here's the problem. The problem is you're making the housing prices... And that's why young people are emigrating. That's why homelessness is through the roof.
There's a 200 million gap in your figures on housing. Yes, there is.
There is not, Barry.
What is the price, the apartment price for a house in Ireland today?
Gentlemen, you're talking over each other and nobody can actually hear you.
Barry.
What is it?
Barry.
Owen. What is it?
Barry.
Owen.
Barry.
Answer the question.
Okay. Are we going to answer each other's questions or are we just going to talk over each other?
Not 250,
it's in your figures. It's absolutely not. The Department of Housing published figures of new build.
Sorry, just let Gabby back in there. You've both had sufficient time here. Sorry, gentlemen.
Not on the misrepresentation of Fianna Fáil.
We're letting Gabby back in. People at home can't hear what you're saying. Gabby,
absolutely not.
These may be future coalition parties in government, but I will make the point that Sinn Féin, if they are going to, you know, they're hoping to have a very good election next.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Election. If they are to go be serious about forming a government, they are going to have to be in the room with parties such as Fianna Fáil, for example. Mm. And they're going to have to make policy. They're going to go back on some of their policies that maybe Owen is saying now today that may be very different in 12 months' time even. So, for example, things like the Special Criminal Court, we have seen Sinn Féin change their position on that to try and kind of move much more towards the centre so that they are more appealing to those potential coalition partners.
OK, very briefly, Gary Murphy, do you think any of this polling is feeding into the government, particularly the overarchers, thinking around the general election date?
I doubt it. I mean, but it is a hugely important decision for the Taoiseach. He can't take it on his own, and constitutionally, of course, it's his prerogative. But it would be a very stupid Taoiseach to not decide with his coalition partners. But Leo Varadkar has really not been very good for Fine Gael. I mean, all he's done is brought them down in the polls. Now, they got him back into government in 2020, but the great boy wonder of 2017 is long gone. He has one shot and he would want to get it right.
All right, look, we're going to leave that conversation there for now. My thanks to Gary Murphy for joining us this evening. My other guests are staying with me. And up next, we discuss the row at Cabinet between Eamon Ryan and Simon Coveney about data centres. Do stay with us. Welcome back. Well, from the infrastructure required to run websites to the vast amount of information stored on apps, data centres are an essential part of maintaining these vital everyday services. Presently, Ireland has over 80 data centres nationwide, with 14 currently under construction and planning permission granted for a further 40. But recently, reports emerged of a heated row between Cabinet Minister Simon Coveney and Eamon Ryan over the use of these data centres. Well, Fianna Fáil's Barry Cowan, Sinn Féin's Ona Brin and the Irish Independent's Gabby Gadfascata have stayed with me to discuss this. So this was reported at the weekend of this particular row between Eamon Ryan and Simon Coveney, but there has been tensions within Cabinet for quite some time about whether or not we should be allowing more data centres to hook up to the grid in Ireland, with opposing views within Cabinet.
Yeah, so the environmental, I suppose, argument is that data centres are very, very bad for the environment because they suck up a lot of electricity and, of course, we need, you know, a lot of energy to generate that electricity and so on. This row is quite interesting. So it seems to be that Green Party leader, Climate Minister Eamon Ryan, you know, he made the point of saying that whatever planning permission that we have granted for data centres, they're obviously, you know, planning has been granted for them and they're okay. But for any future data centres, that they should be carbon neutral, carbon zero, basically. Enterprise Minister Simon Coveney saying that that was not the policy that was agreed at a recent cabinet subcommittee. And that's, I suppose, where the row has kind of come to a head. It's interesting to see the way the Green Party tries to push some of its policies and the pushback from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael on different issues. I mean, Fianna Fáil has been hammering the Green Party leader over things like roads, not enough progress on road projects in their own constituencies, you know, looking for roads to be renovated, constituents saying, what's the story with this road and that road? And of course, the Green Party maybe perhaps is not so keen to invest that funding or perhaps prioritise things like active travel, you know, cycling, walking, public transport, etc. So I suppose the things that happen at Cabinet are really just a bigger reflection of what is happening on the ground between politicians and the coalition parties.
And there have been some fairly prominent Fianna Fáil members who have criticised Eamon Ryan's stance on data centres, and you're one of them, Barry Cowan. What's your difficulty here?
Well, first of all, 10 billion has been lost in recent years in digital business to this country. You've seen data centres and cloud storage facilities being built and planned for in Spain, Germany, Belgium and Norway, UK, for Microsoft, Apple, Google and Amazon. And the reason why is our grid and energy security remains challenged. And that is at the fault and at the foot of CRU, of Airgrid, of Department, of
for not living up to the commitment and the expectation that was given many years ago in relation to providing the sort of competition that was necessary to allow, because at the moment...
But what Eamon Ryan is saying, just to be clear, he's saying you can allow more data centres into the country, but they need to be basically self-sufficient.
Yeah, but look...
What's the problem with that?
The problem is that we're losing business, and we're losing very important and relevant business. And these people, you know, Eamon Ryan might shrug his shoulders and say there's not much jobs involved in data centres, but they support a lot of jobs. They support a lot of investment in this country. They support a lot of revenue resources available to us that predicates everything else we do in relation to the public service. And there's been a failing on the part of his department, the CRU, to have energy security where it should be. There was competitions held years past. Certain companies won them, didn't commit to them, paid the penalties, walked away. The grid remained challenged. The infrastructure remains challenged. Even the commitment that's been made by Eamon Ryan in relation to the offshore potential is not what it should be, as much as he would believe it to be.
Okay.
And there's foreshore licences being sought by companies who wish to make investment there that have been waiting 2 years to get that foreshore licence to investigate the bed of the sea in order to ensure that they can continue with their investment and their development. And we have the potential to develop a pan-European project in the offshore
and
coast that can deliver $300 billion to the economy. That's the size of the economy today.
Okay, so said in the piece in the Irish Times, you said that the minister has too many portfolios.
I do. I believe that too, yes. Because
so what would you take off him?
Well, energy should certainly be on its own. As I said to you, a pan-European project that can deliver $300 billion to this economy, which is the size of the country by 2050, needs to be, heaven and earth need to be moved in order to ensure that that's the case.
If you were in government, Eoghan O'Brien, would you move heaven and earth to get more data centres into Ireland?
I'd move heaven and earth to have the maximum level of renewable energy, which is what both our economy and our society needs. But it is kind of interesting. Barry almost sounds like a member of opposition as opposed to a member of a government party. And part of our challenge here at the minute, we need to have an honest conversation about this, is that the proliferation of data centres over the last number of decades data centres are important, right? Mm-hmm. But the proliferation of them as a consequence of a lack of government planning has meant that it has caused real challenges. Mm-hmm. So, for example, currently, data centres account for about 18% of our electricity usage. EU-wide average is about 3%. It's going to rise to a third by 2030. That's not an argument against data centres per se. It's an argument to say if we're going to avoid the mistakes that we've made under this government and the previous government, we need a proper plan. And that proper plan needs to ensure if we have data centres, they're data centres that are actually critical to the economy, not data centres that are doing cryptocurrency and Bitcoin mining are unnecessary advertising.
But
you don't know, you see, because here's...
What you don't know is, Microsoft, Apple, Google, Amazon...
You can pick figures out of thin air if you want. What you don't know is what the data centres are doing because there's no transparency around it. What we do know is our electricity grid cannot cope with the demand that's there.
Okay, so I'm just not quite clear. If we were able to improve the grid, would you say bring on more data centres?
The first thing is there needs to be a proper, coherent plan to say what data centres, where, with what supporting infrastructure. Because here's the other problem.
The principle that most data centres should be able to produce their own energy is the one that Eamon Ryan is advocating. Do you agree with that?
First of all, I'd like to see as much of industry reliant on renewable energies. But the problem is Barry's solution isn't a solution at all, because Barry said in his press release today that if they can't access the electricity grid, which they can't because of energy security requirements, then they should be able to get gas connections. That runs completely contrary to his own...
It runs completely contrary to his own
government's emissions reductions targets and climate action plan, a thing that Fianna Fáil supports. So what do we need? We need a proper plan. We don't need a press release issued by somebody in the mouth of a European election campaign beating up on his cabinet colleagues. We need a credible plan that ensures, as we grow economically and socially, we're able to do that in a way...
OK, let's just have Barry
Would you find a means to improve the manner by which the likes of foreshore licences are awarded to those that wish to make investments on the west coast of these islands?
Absolutely, and which minister is responsible for that?
What should I mean?
Your party colleague. Your party colleague. And one of the reasons why offshore wind has been delayed so badly is because your party colleague, Dara O'Brien, couldn't get his act together with the offshore planning regime. It's now there, but he still hasn't brought forward the Marine Protected Areas legislation, which is also going to delay offshore. And here you are whinging about Eamon Ryan.
No.
It's the government,
it's not the government causing this problem.
What's your proposal?
Okay.
Light touch regulation, scrap the utilities regulator, and go back to the bad old days of Fianna Fáil.
Is that what you're suggesting, Barry Cowan?
Failure to plan, that is the hallmark of Fianna Fáil when you're on government.
What we're talking about is a planning regime which doesn't take two years for a foreshore licence in the first instance. And secondly,
a much more
streamlined planning system.
Sure.
To stop objectors like you do with housing and your colleagues across the country when you tell you we want more, but you'll object to everything that comes before
nonsense.
You. No, excuse me, what? Let me finish.
What
let me
nonsense?
Finish.
No, what nonsense?
Can I be allowed to finish?
Why don't okay, sorry, Oda, but if you keep talking over each other, nobody at home can hear anything, I'm sure. So if you could stop talking over each other.
You know we've proposals in, for example, to ensure that Bord Pleanála has a statutory time period to make a decision.
We argued for that in 2016 and you opposed it. 2016 we could have had that.
I did not have. I brought forward a bill. You voted against the amendments. Your amendments
which would have had
your
statutory
amendments now
timelines.
And okay. The right amendments
Gabbia,
are two different
like
things.
Always with Fianna Fáil.
Is there a sense... Sorry, excuse me. Gabbia, is there a sense sometimes that the Green Party have too much power in this government?
Well, I think if you look at what... Barry Cowan was looking for was a cabinet reshuffle and for this to be taken off Eamon Ryan's hands. If you look at the departments that Media Minister Catherine Martin has, it's a whole plethora of names, including tourism, arts, sports, etc. Minister Roderick O'Gorman, the three cabinet ministers, Minister Roderick O'Gorman has, you know, equality, integration, children as well. So not only is he reforming the childcare sector, but he's also trying to house international protection applicants that are coming into this country and Ukrainian refugees. So they all have a lot on their plates, respectively. I think the criticism from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and especially some of the more rural politicians, is a reflection of the Green Party is not very popular in rural Ireland, and they're going to find that in the next election.
Is that what the problem is, Barry Cowan, that sometimes you feel the Green Party tail wags the Fianna Fáil dog?
No, not necessarily. We entered into a programme for government with them. There were some issues that arose during the course of any government where there may be disagreement on certain matters. In relation to roads, for example, there was a commitment given that it would be a 2-to-1 split between public transport and maintenance and new projects. Now,
Minister, so they don't deliver on the promises and the agreement
Minister
that you
Ryan,
have?
For example,
that what you're saying,
Minister Ryan, in some cases, has cancelled projects that were approved prior to him coming into office and much work and spending done on them. For reasons unbeknownst to me in certain cases, but that's something we will take up with him and we will seek to address and rectify. I do still stand by the initial. It wasn't a reshuffle. I'm saying in the next government, there should definitely be a standalone Ministry for Energy, considering the issue of energy security being so pivotal and vital to the progress of the economy.
But it's not very easy to always kick Eamon Ryan when, in fairness, the three parties are in government together. You can sit down, you can say, I want a meeting with Eamon Ryan and I'm going to hash these things out with him face to face.
Of course, that's the way government works. And as I said to you, there is a programme for government in place. And in the main, you stick to it and try and implement it. And issues arise during the course of it whereby the interpretation of it differs.
Okay, but
and in the case
very,
of some transport
briefly,
and roads projects, there is a difference of opinion between what he believed to be a 2-to-1 split for new projects and I believe it was just for new ones.
Billy Kelleher said Eamon Ryan is making unilateral decisions in this cabinet. Do you agree?
Well, there's no decision on the issue that he and in relation to data centres taken as of yet. So he can't make that decision without the approval and the agreement of the rest of the cabinet. So Billy Keller is right in that sense.
All right, look, we're going to leave that discussion there for now. My thanks to Barry Cowan, Ona Brin and Gabbia Gadfus-Gatta. After the break, we're going to be answering your questions about the upcoming referendum, so do stay with us. You're very welcome back. Well, in less than 4 days, the public will head to the polls to vote on two constitutional changes concerning family and care. A recent Sunday Independent Ireland Thinks poll revealed that more than a third of voters know little or nothing at all about the upcoming referenda. Earlier, I spoke with Chair of the Electoral Commission, Judge Marie Baker, and I started by asking her what exactly people are being asked to vote on.
You're asked to vote on two things. The first one, the family proposal, the family referendum, is the one on the white ballot paper. This concerns the definition of the family. And to tell you what we're being asked to vote on, I need to tell you the centrality of the family in Irish constitutional law. The Constitution recognises that the family is a central unit in society. And for example, later in the Constitution, it recognises that the family is the primary and natural educator of children, not the state, but the family. The family that has that special constitutional recognition is the family founded on marriage. And what's proposed is that there will be an extended definition, not a change in the recognition, but an extended definition of what kind of families you mean. The family founded on marriage and the family founded on other durable relationships. Now, it's not proposed to change the current recognition of the importance of marriage as an institution. That will remain. What will also remain is the recognition of the family unit as an important unit in society. But what's proposed is that that family unit be broader than just the family founded on marriage. Sounds straightforward. When you put all those balls in the air, you understand there are a lot of individual factors, but what's proposed is an additional definition of the family.
OK. Does it put the family based on marriage on the same sort of status as a durable relationship?
When you're speaking about the family unit and its special recognition, then yes. But as I said, the Constitution will still recognise the importance of marriage as an institution, and that might unlock certain other aspects of our law, and that might be the explanation for certain other distinctions in our law between the married person and the unmarried person, as it were.
Because one of the questions we've had in from a viewer is what effect will durable relationships, if it's put into the Constitution, have on social welfare recipients? Could it have those type of
effects? Well, in fact, that's a really good question for this reason. It was, in fact, decided by the Supreme Court only a few weeks ago in the O'Mara case that particular social welfare payment, which was a contributory widower's pension, was wrongly denied to a person who was not married to his partner. His partner died, they had three children, and the court said it was in breach of the equality provisions in the Constitution that the Social Welfare Code excluded that family unit, even though it wasn't a family founded on marriage, even though it wasn't the family that the Constitution recognises. So, in a sense, some of the social welfare distinctions that you might have found between families founded on marriage and families founded on durable relationships have already been dealt with by law. So there won't be any, I think, there's not no obvious place where there would be a change.
But some would say that tax laws in this country favour married couples as opposed to cohabiting couples.
Yes, they do for a reason.
Yeah, if they're put sort of on a more equal footing, I suppose, if this durable relationships is put into the Constitution, could that differential not be challenged then, I suppose?
It could, but I can tell you one thing. The reason why there is a special regime for married people for tax in Ireland is because of a case brought in 1982 by a couple who were married who said that they were actually worse off by virtue of getting married. And the Supreme Court said that the legal and constitutional protection of marriage meant that they were entitled to be treated in an especially favourable way, and married people have been treated in a favourable way for tax purposes since then. There's nothing directly in this proposal that would change that approach to tax. What I would say is this: if this referendum passes, the family referendum passes, the government essentially would have to look at all existing legislation to see if it meets the test of the new definition of the family. But families don't pay tax. Individuals pay tax. So it might be that the government would look at it and say the current tax regime is perfectly satisfactory because it favours marriage and the Constitution permits us to do that. And they might look at other areas of law and say, yes, the family unit needs more protection here, and that family unit can be the broader family unit and not just a married family unit.
Okay.
So it's a complex series of things, and the Constitution only sets the very, very basic framework within which legislation is passed and within which it's ultimately tested.
OK, let's speak about the other question that's been asked
care
to people,
question.
The care question. So, again, what has been put to people?
This is a green ballot paper, and this involves a proposal to remove an entire provision of the Constitution, 41.2, and replace it with a new provision which will go in a different place. The place probably doesn't matter hugely. At the moment, the Constitution recognises that by working in the home, women provide an important protection and support to the common good and to society. And it goes on then to say, in what's regarded by some people as archaic language, but which is in fact a positive enough expression, it says that the state would endeavour to ensure that mothers, not women generally, but mothers, wouldn't have to go out to work to the neglect of their duties in the home. Now, that's a focus here on the care provided by women in the home and the care provided by mothers in the home. And what's proposed is to remove both of those provisions and replace them with a more simple version, which would recognise care provided by family members generally, men or women, to one another within the family.
And the Taoiseach said this evening that in relation to that care amendment, it's putting an obligation on the state to strive to support carers. Is that accurate?
That's a political statement by the Taoiseach. Can I say one thing, however? At the moment, the Constitution says that the state would endeavour to ensure that mothers don't have to go out to work to the neglect of their duty. You have children, I think. I have children. We have gone to work. It hasn't prevented us going out to work, nor indeed would women say or mothers say that they can be protected from going, that they can stay at home and not work and be supported fully by the state. It has had relatively little positive or negative effect. It's a recognition. Now, the Taoiseach says that, and the Taoiseach, I think, is relying on a view that the Commission has, that we think that the word strive is quite a strong word, so that the state would strive to support care in the home means a positive obligation to try hard.
One of the questions from viewers is, will that change have any meaningful impact on our lives? And we don't know,
meaningful
do we?
Meaningful is hard. Meaningful is hard. First of all, the Constitution has meaning in itself because it's an expression of values. So we live in a country where the backdrop is this. This is the backdrop to your life. These are your rights as expressed. You must decide whether these rights as expressed reflect your values or whether you want them to be different. So if these referendums change, there is a difference in the background. There's a difference in the background against which all legislation is tested. And it's a different emphasis in the Constitution on different kinds of values. So an immediate effect? No. No, there won't be an immediate effect, except there'll be a change in values. But legislation will have to be tested against it.
Judge Marie Baker from the Electoral Commission speaking to me a little earlier. And remember, you can cast your vote in those referendums this coming Friday, the 8th of March. Well, that's it from us this evening. My thanks to all of my guests from the Late team here. Good night and do take care.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.